Good news, ding-dongs. The class of cults is back in its final sessions, and boy, do we have a great deal in store for you. For the ultra-low buy-in cost of $0, you have the opportunity to recruit your friends and family to listen to this series we've put together that combines cult-like behaviors with some of the worst aspects of capitalism. We're talking about pyramid schemes. I mean multi-level marketing companies. And joining me on this journey is the wonderful Beverly Bamberry, who was with us on our two-part series about the cult of the self-proclaimed mental health guru, Teal Swan. So go check those out. But in the meantime, welcome back, Beverly.
Thank you, Allison. It's wonderful to be back.
I was so excited whenever I broached the idea, like, hey, you want to come on and talk about MLMs, and you were into it, because I've had there are people that have casual knowledge or whatever, and some people have no knowledge at all about this topic, and I'm obsessed with it personally. So it's great that you wanted to come back and talk about these companies. So real quick, though, I want to give the rundown of how we've decided to cover this topic in a way that suits us both, because we're both ADHD kids in our own ways, you know, and we both saw the breadth of the subject and we're like immediately overwhelmed with how to deal with it. So we've decided we're going to do a three-part series, and in each episode, we're bringing in an MLM that we have each researched. And in the course of that discussion, reveal what makes them either a bad idea altogether or something you should at least question before you start investing your money in this type of business venture. For this episode, we're going with the OGs. These two companies we're going to talk about today are so ubiquitous on both a commercial and a cultural level that you probably don't think about them the same way that you might think of other kind of newer MLMs. But these companies walked so the rest of them could run away with your cash. So today we're going to talk about Avon and Tupperware, two of the oldest ones in the game. Now, Beverly, I wanted to ask you, do you or have you ever had products from Avon or Tupperware throughout your life?
Oh my goodness, yes. My mother still gives me Avon stuff in my stocking at Christmas.
Yes.
And what's funny is, in some of my research, I am not the only person that gets Avon in their stocking at Christmas. But I will say, the products themselves are fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Ultimately, like, yeah, I don't think it's not like Monad. It's not going to make my hair fall out. Oh, but that's another episode.
Exactly. And I agree with you completely. My grandmother is still an Avon person. She still has her little Avon catalog. And I also received gifts, Avon gifts, throughout the years. Skin So Soft is probably the first product I think of Avon. It's this really lovely, like, spritz. And it just smells like baby oil or something, like a musky kind of, just has a really unique scent. And I imagine that anybody listening to this that has had Avon products knows it can immediately call that up in their brain.
Absolutely. You say Skin So Soft and I smell those words.
yes.
But you know what? You know what it is for me? And I don't know if they even do this anymore, but I know, like, in the 80s and 90s for sure, they had these little tiny, tiny little lipstick samples.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like the cutest little tiniest. And I actually, like, loved them. And my mom really didn't want me to wear much makeup when I was younger, like, maybe 14-ish, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, I would sneak the little tiny, like, little mini lipstick sample things in my backpack and, you know, be like, putting on lipstick at school, you know?
Yes.
Anyways, that was actually, I still have so much fondness for the memories of those tiny lipsticks.
I am so with you on that. My mom also would get hold of some of those samples, either from Avon or Mary Kay, which is another one we could talk about later on in the series. They've been around quite a while as well. But yeah, the little, in the perfume samples too, there was always like little tiny itty bitty perfume bottles. And some of them even had a little spray on them. So you could just spritz this tiny bit of perfume on yourself. I mean, yeah, as a kid, that's the coolest thing ever. And especially if you like to play dress up or, you know, put on makeup, which, yeah, I was probably around, I got my first makeup when I was like 12 or 13. So that was kind of my introduction to a lot of makeup, was through Avon. And Tupperware My God, my mom's kitchen was filled with that stuff when I was a kid. I have very specific memories about like the juice pitcher with the little pop-up lid and the bowls.
I actually have some hand-me-down Tupperware in my cupboard now. And when it was given to me, because by then I was in my very more anti-MLM, like, kind of, you know, angry phase about it. I considered not accepting the hand-me-down, but I will say again, and this is not speaking of business practices, this is completely removed from that, but they're really good like these products are really good, the ones I have. They're just mixing bowls with lids, but the lids are like tight, the plastic is thick, like, you know, they're quality products. So I was like, I'm just going
to
keep them.
And I want to stipulate, by the way, that when we talk about multi-level marketing or pyramid scheme type companies, it's separate slightly from direct sales. Direct sales really are quite literally, you buy a product from a manufacturer and then you sell it yourself for a profit. There's no other recruitment involved. There's none of that kind of cultish kind of talk. I mean, sure, they could be a little obnoxious, but
I was going to just say the difference between these two things is actually the story of Avon. So go ahead, but I'm going to be able to speak to this.
Yes. I love it. And very similarly there too. But then, you know, when you start involving the MLM factor, that's when you start running into problems because it's creating this guise. You're no longer just selling a product. You're selling the seller. We'll get into all that in just a moment. But Tupperware and Avon in particular were very unique for their time. And I'm quite sure, actually, that Avon predates Tupperware by a good bit.
Oh, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, because that was popular in the 30s or even prior, whereas Tupperware came around in the late 40s or thereabouts.
Avon started in the 1800s, my friend.
Oh, my God. Well, you know what? I'm not going to hold you back for too much longer on this because I'm champing at the bit. But when we start talking about some of these other companies that are more modern, the product quality actually becomes quite questionable. And it's marked up very high because you got to cover the overhead of the scheme itself. But Tupperware and Avon products and even Mary Kay to a certain extent, I had a good bit of Mary Kay years ago before I became hip to the MLM thing. You might say to yourself, oh man, yeah, some of these products are really good, especially the Tupperware pre, I would say, 2000s. Something has changed with the quality of it over. It's not as good as it used to be. But if you have like mom or grandma's Tupperware in your cupboard, you have a decent product. That stuff is not going to warp. It's going to stand the test of time. And that's something that you just don't see much of anymore. And, you know, but we'll get to also when we start talking about product quality, when we talk about some of these other MLMs and future episodes. And the future episodes are probably going to be a good bit darker as we venture down the kind of more dangerous, windy path. The reason we're starting here is because these older companies weren't quite as invested in deceiving people. And so they were doing genuine business back in those days for the most part. And so you'll see as time goes on how things change. But since we're going back to the 1800s, that just excites me because I want to know. I didn't do any research, direct research on Avon. So Beverly, I'm going to let you take over and start telling me what you learned about Avon.
Awesome. And I didn't read about Tupperware either. I figured we could teach each other here in our episode.
I love it.
So I actually thought Avon was like from the 40s or 50s myself. But it turns out it was started in 1886 by a book salesman. And this book salesman was named David McConnell. And he, you know, was going door to door as you did back then, pre-telephone for the most part and everything, right? And he realized, you know, what the ladies really want, it's not books, friends, it's perfume.
No, of course.
So he kind of was like, you know, he like had some business partners and he was like, dudes, we should sell some perfume. And so they called themselves initially the California Perfume Company. So in the late 1800s through like at least the 1920s, they were the California Perfume Company. And they actually were one of the first companies to hire female salespeople.
Very nice.
Because McConnell realized that women actually like buying women's products from other women. So he actually kind of like, he kind of was hip to that, which is just a shockingly, shockingly hip given the time period that we're in history, right?
By golly, these females are so useful. Who would have guessed?
I know. And so one of the things that I was wondering when I was like, wait, how did we go from California Perfume Company to Avon? According to a couple of places, and I mean, I can't verify this, McConnell's dead, you know, whatever, but apparently he named it after the birthplace of Shakespeare. So let it not be said that Mr. McConnell was not of a literary bent. So that is why it is called Avon. And that happened either, I thought that was cool. And that happened either sometime between 1928 and 1939 is when the name change happened. I really couldn't kind of find any reliable evidence. But anyways, a long time ago. Another interesting thing is it is actually the very first direct selling company, as far as I could figure out, or one of the very first. It still is in the top 20 beauty brands in the world. Like, it still is a top beauty brand. And by revenue, it is the second largest multi-level marketing company after Amway.
Wow.
So it's still big business, but,
there's so much but going on in this episode.
So yeah, let me go a little further. So a lot of us, at least from the 80s kids, you know, us maybe Gen X and so remember still hearing people saying like, ding dong, Avon calling, that sort of thing really started in the 50s. And that's probably why I thought of it as like this 40s or 50s company, because I think that's where it really shoots into the public consciousness in the same way with those types of advertisements, right?
Right.
And it was all very wholesome. It was just direct selling. There was no multi-level marketing yet. This had not happened still. And it actually didn't happen. Avon was actually not MLM until 2005.
Holy cow. Wow.
They were simply direct sales, but I mean, well, what's been happening? The web, online shopping. And I think that's actually probably why product quality's declined for like other companies too, because revenues from direct sales were starting to decline. Once you bring in internet shopping, like, it's a different ball game, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So in 2005, in a kind of a desperation move, they created that pyramidal shaped structure.
It might be a scheme of some kind.
I'm gonna dance around that a little bit. Yeah, they created that structure. And so while their business is failing, they actually try to bring on more people, which is just like every other business. That's just so counterintuitive, right? But very Avon much. Was getting desperate. So yeah, I mean, catalog shopping is archaic anymore. Like, my mom still likes to use the catalog, but my mom's 70, right? I mean, know, like me, like, I'm like, catalogs, what is this waste of paper? Give me the
website, you know? Yeah, exactly. and you know, it's amazing, the catalog business is still pretty thriving, I think, with sort of the older Gen Xers into the boomer and older people. I have friends that have worked at call centers for, I mean, I used to work at one back in the 90s. I worked for Victoria's Secret catalog, where it was still a lot of young people calling into that. But I imagine most people ordering direct from catalogs now are, they're not big on the internet. They're my grandma,
and that's fine. Yeah, exactly, yeah,
exactly.
Like my mom, if my grandma were alive, surely my grandma. But like, and I mean, what's funny though, of course, I mean, I'm approaching 50, like eventually, not too far from now. It does happen to every generation, so no judgment, moms. I love you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm even noticing moments where like my 20-year-olds are starting to feel old because of the stuff that kids are doing. I'm like, welcome to adulthood.
Dude, I heard The Cure in the grocery store a couple months ago, and I was like, I don't know how to feel about this. Like, on the one hand, awesome, woo, on The Cure in the grocery store, but on the other, it's like, oh God. I'm the generation of the Muzak now. Like,
we're clearly running the world now. That was the clearest sign that Gen X was in charge. When, yes, you walk into Kroger and hear Fascination Street, it's like, okay, this is a completely different ballgame here.
Yeah, it really turned into like not only grocery shopping, but an existential soul searching.
Seriously. Period. Yes.
So Avon... Part of Avon's bullshit. Sorry, just to bring it back around, because
this is
the part I find this jaw dropping. Even for an MLM, you can order direct from from Avon, right on their website. You don't even need a rep, which means they have all these reps and they're competing with their own reps.
Yes.
Like, it's just yes. jaw-dropping. I can't even imagine. Like, if I were going to do Avon, which, I mean, I'm not, but if I were going to do it, and you're telling me I got to recruit and I got to hustle, and then I look on your website, and you're like, oh, order. Just buy from us. Yeah, because it's like, the site does try to get you to find a rep. Like, it has a little button, like, find a rep, da-da-da. But it also has a pop-up that says 10% off your first order. They're not discouraging you to order right on the website.
I think, too, that companies will do this. Some companies will do this, probably a lot of them, because they're trying to give themselves the air of legitimacy, because they know where the money's really coming from. They're not making money on those sales. That's where that scheme really gets people, is, you know, if you're working as a rep, a seller for one of these companies, you are being competed against by the company itself. In addition to that, you know, the pressure is put on. You have to start investing your own money to either recruit people, to get more inventory, because it is all about creating that culture of mm-hmm. hustle, hustle, success. If you don't hustle, then you won't succeed. And if you don't succeed, it's your fault because you didn't work hard enough. You didn't try hard enough. And that's the mentality that is given to the sellers, and largely why they are considered cultish by a lot of standards, because they are programming people under very faulty, illogical, irrational ways, emotional ways to get them to stay. Absolutely. And it's so bad. And so with Avon, it's interesting that they went that long as a direct sales. Then in 2000, you said 2005?
2005. That's, yeah, crazy.
Because I was trying to figure that out, too, with Tupperware is the same way. They didn't become MLM for many years, but I couldn't find exactly when.
Avon was publicly traded company until 2020. And so we actually did have a lot of data. Mm-hmm. And I think that I didn't actually read the reports because my ADHD brain was not in a position to read quarterly statements. I'm just going to be honest with you about that. I did find some interesting quotes, though, from a 2009 report, but I'll get to that in a moment. Another interesting thing, just a little bit of a side note, actually, just with the Avon stuff, is when I was Googling just Avon crap, you know, as you do when you're researching, I found a bunch of Avon stuff on Amazon. And at first I was like, are they selling on Amazon? And I was just so taken aback. But they're not. All these different reps somehow, yes. I don't know how, are selling on Amazon. And I saw a lot of things that were like a lot of 20 of the same deodorant for like $30, which that's somebody who's getting rid of stock they overpurchased, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. there's no way they're going to make money at $1.50 or $1.25 or whatever it is. A tube of deodorant, right? So,
right.
I mean, and there's a lot of, like, lots of six mascara. It's definitely, I'm sure it's not all of it, but from my own cursory observations, it seems like it really is people just trying to get rid of overstock. And
that
is kind of sad.
Completely, that is the thing. And there are some companies, some MLMs, one of them, Unique. Have you ever heard of Unique? They're a makeup one. And I was reading a fantastic blog written by this woman who started her Unique. She was brought in by someone else, of mm-hmm. course, and she was very skeptical at first, and she remained skeptical throughout it, thank God, because that's kind of how she ended up out of it without being too harmed financially and otherwise. But they specifically ban their sellers from selling overstock like that. And so they want mm-hmm. you to return it, or they want to buy it back from you, but they buy it back at horrible rates, or they make it so you really can't sell it back to them because they keep updating things like packaging. So it makes it hard. It's yep. sort of like a prescription drug company, like insulin, for instance. They can't mm-hmm. make a generic because they keep updating the patent just so you can't genericify it, whatever, that's a word, I'm making it today.
Genericized.
Yeah, it's been genericized. They find all these loopholes, and so in order to keep from sticking to the word that they sell you whenever you're mm-hmm. signing on for this. So yeah, Facebook groups, private Facebook groups are often formed as well for sellers to offload their inventory because they've decided to get out and they have to recoup some of that lost money. And we're talking big money here. This is mm-hmm. a lot of the average. And yeah, I looked at, we were probably looking at a lot of the same data charts. The United States Federal Trade Commission has stunning numbers of reports on MLMs and the earnings and the lack of earnings and everything. And I'll have links to all that in the show notes if you really want to pore over this data, because there is a good bit of it from companies. Like you said, Avon is pretty transparent. Mm-hmm. I think you could get a good number of reports from Tupperware too, but some of these other ones don't provide any
real data. I should note, Avon used to be transparent.
Oh,
Avon,
okay.
You're transparent, but we're going to get to that.
Yeah, and you said they were publicly traded until 2020. Is that right?
Until 2020.
So that's the other thing. A lot of these are publicly traded companies. Tupperware is still on the stock market, but it's way down. They're about to go tits up. Very, very certain.
You know, and this is the thing, like, I think initially direct sales was really, there was nothing wrong with that. Like, because initially, way, way, way back, decades and decades ago, it was exactly what it said it was. You know, you bought product, you sold it, and there wasn't a whole glut of people because people weren't trying to constantly recruit, right?
Right.
So in 2009, sorry, I'm groaning because this is just so disgusting.
Oh,
in
2009,
that is when things really kicked into high gear with the bullshit at Avon. And for those folks who might be listening, who might be a little bit younger or a lot younger, there was a terrible financial crisis happening at this time in many, many parts of the world, actually, but, you know, certainly the United States. And that year, Avon spent the money on a Super Bowl ad. And did the Super Bowl ad advertise cosmetics? No, friends.
No.
It advertised their business opportunity.
Oh.
It's this commercial, and it's all these women going, I can't get fired because it's my business. And, you know, Avon really changed my life, you know, even through, you know, all with money being so uncertain these days, you know, you can sell Avon. So they're just really pushing and pushing this recruiting at this point when people are suffering. And that is one of those keys of the MLM, is preying on people who are either financially illiterate or desperate or any of those things.
Such a thing, especially then too, because people were out of work. There were so many millions of people that were struggling to find jobs. And so it is, you're right, the perfect hunting ground is really what it is for these companies. And you're right, and people in their lowest and most scared time to entice people to invest what little they have in a venture that the FTC reports themselves state that every single person involved in one of these, it doesn't matter who it is, it doesn't matter how legit they may seem, everybody loses money. 99.9% of people lose money while doing one of these MLMs.
Yep. That's absolutely right. And in 2009, another interesting tidbit I found was that they had increased the number of Avon reps around 3% that year in 2009, but their revenue was down 9%.
Oh,
so they were losing money, hand over fist, really, almost 10% revenue down year over year is immense. And then you've somehow still increased the rep. So, like, less money has got to be divided amongst more people. And it's just, it's completely nonsensical. So, the demand for the products isn't there. Online shopping is happening. Like, nobody wants to do this Avon thing anymore. Yeah. And, there was a really wonderful in-depth blog post that we can also link to on a website called Traveling Jezebel.
Okay.
And she actually it was a super good piece. I mean, I looked at tons of stuff, but it was something that I just want to shout out because it was awesome. So we'll link that. But she pointed out a quote, and I have confirmed this independently. It is a real quote. Geraldine Brieg, who at the time in 2009 was the president of Avon North America, she actually said, right now, our direct selling opportunity really is the number one product we have to sell.
Oh my God.
Their annual report that year, or it might have been quarterly, I don't remember, but one of their SEC reports that year, Security and Exchange Commission, for those folks who might not be in the US, their report quote actually says the total revenue for 2009 was negatively impacted by the continued recessionary pressure as a lower average order received from representatives more than offset an increase in active representatives. So average orders remain challenging, particularly in non-beauty categories. The growth in active representatives during 2009 reflected our ongoing recruiting and training efforts. They were literally saying right here in these public documents. Yeah, we're not making any money, but we sure are recruiting. And the reason that recruiting makes the money, and this is true of, I think, pretty much any MLM, and the reason recruiting still makes them some money is because when you join the business, you buy in. You have to purchase catalogs and samples. And now I will say, Amazon, I keep saying Amazon instead of Avon. Oh my God. I'm so used to the A and the N, like and being the on. Amazon these days.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah,
so Avon still, I will say, is not the worst of these offenders. Not to say it's not an offender, because it is, but the buy-in, I couldn't find, again, they're not really transparent now that they're not public anymore. The buy-in for Avon still, to my knowledge, is much lower than the buy-in for a lot of other companies.
Yeah, like, because it used to be a lot of them would be like Mary Kay back in when somebody approached me for a wonderful opportunity about Mary Kay back in probably around the same time, actually, around 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And the kit that you buy is like $300. Mm-hmm. Compare that to, and that gets you a good number of samples. It can get you started with, if you have some contacts already, you can have yourself a little party, because that's the thing. You got to have the party. The party is the lifeblood. And we'll talk about that too with the Tupperware, because
I've been to some parties, man.
Oh, man. I've been to so many.
Mary Kay was actually the first party I went to when I was very young, probably, I don't know, 17 or something. Mm-hmm. And of course I knew nothing. And I'm like, ooh, a makeup party. And I'm just thinking, oh, it's just a party, because innocent little me. And then they're like, we're doing stuff. And I'm like, this is so fun, and putting on makeup. And then the sales pitch begins. And I was like, oh, shit. What have I gotten myself into? Because I have no money. Like, I'm just a broke teenager, dude.
And that's how they approach, too. It isn't enough for that rep to try to sell you some makeup. They really want to bring you in on the business. The ones that I've been to the most would be Pampered Chef, and it's all kitchenware type stuff. And you know, my Pampered Chef stuff is fine. I have a few items that I actually use. Although if you ever want Pampered Chef, go to a thrift store. You'll find the kitchen gadgets are full of Pampered Chef. And plus the parties are fun because you cook. And so like you plan a menu, the hostess plans a menu. And I say hostess because most of these people are women. This is very much aimed at women. Not saying men don't get into this. Men very much get into Amway, and we'll get into that in another episode. Mm-hmm. But you put the menu together, and you're having some drinks, and you're having a good time, and you're using the gadgets, and they work great. And some of them are really stupid. But, you know, it's like, that's kitchen gadgets for you, you know? So, like, this is like a one-use item, but sure, I'm going to spend $15, $20, and that's what it is. It's expensive. This is fine product that you could buy in any store, kitchen store, or online on Amazon for a few bucks, and they're marking that shit up, you know, 50 to 100% or more to cover that overhead, because what they want you to do is buy in. Like, oh, imagine how much money you would save if you actually sold this, because you would get discounts. And then if you hosted parties, you'd get all this free stuff. And it's just like,
I've actually been to a fair number of Pampered Chef parties myself. And I'd say most of them after I already understood, but they're still, even when you know, there can be so much social pressure to do the thing, big time. And I mean, now that I am older, again, speaking of being almost 50, I also now don't care as much about making everyone happy. So that's a lovely thing. The last Pampered Chef party I went to was this really weird situation with this lady whose boyfriend was sort of like my ex-boyfriend, and everything was very awkward. But she and I worked at the same company. And so it was just like, again, there was weird undertones and everything. So I ended up buying something anyway, just because I felt weird. I just felt weird. And I was like, maybe I'll feel less weird if I buy something. And
like, when you get people involved in a group like that, you're automatically under some sort of peer pressure. And if you're the one person that doesn't hand over an order form, then you feel like you're that you have just shown up to eat the free food and drink the free drinks and leave. And so then you're like, oh, am I going to be the one person that doesn't buy? So I guess I'll just flip through and find the cheapest thing that I can get away with buying. And that's how I ended up with, say, a special spoon that allows you to mash eggs better when you're making egg salad. Like, that's like funny. Something called a fork.
Right. I actually, what's funny is I remember what I ordered, even though this was like almost 20 years ago now. I ordered the gallon size glass measuring cup with a lid,
Oh,
which,
yeah.
again, fantastic product, but paid way too much for it. Could have got it
Yeah.
cheaper elsewhere. And bamboos like cooking tools.
Yes,
And
yes.
I remember that is what I purchased.
You got the batter bowl. That is the batter bowl.
Ah, I the batter bowl. I knew it had a special name. And I mean, again, I will say it's excellent. I do use it when I make mm-hmm. biscuits and all kinds of stuff. But like, but there's a part of me that kind of hates myself when I use it because.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was purchased under duress. But I mean, I also like, I grew up pretty poor, which
yeah.
we're going to get into a little bit of that relating to Avon. We're going to get into that a little more because, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me more about the Avon.
So my mom actually did sell Avon pretty much my entire childhood. She doesn't really sell it anymore. She just has an Avon lady now that she buys from and whatever. But yeah, for many years she bought it. Actually, my parents got into Amway for a while too when I was
Ooh.
Little. See, we were actually poor. My parents were very young parents. Not a lot of financial literacy or education. You know, lower socioeconomic status. Like I'm the first person in my family, you know, on my mom's side anyway, with a degree. So like that kind of tells you a little bit about the milieu.
We have very similar upbringings. It sounds very similar. And also, yeah, my mom got into some stuff too. So yeah. And you're absolutely right. We are the target demographic in a lot of ways for this stuff.
Well, Amway in particular, I don't think Avon, again, was so bad because it really was direct sales at the time. My mom's inability to not buy stuff was the reason that did not work out for her. Like I just was brief touch into Amway. I just remember my parents, I must have been maybe five. Like I was super young. I just remember them like having this stuff and looking super confused and stressed. Like I remember it being a very stressful experience, mm-hmm. even for a young child. So just we'll finish out the history actually here because we're almost done with kind of the overarching Avon story. Okay. So sometime I forget exactly when because I didn't write it down. I think it was around 2015 though. Avon actually sold its North American business to a company called Cerberus Capital Management. And I don't know if you know who they are. From working at PW's PricewaterhouseCoopers for a while, I was a little bit familiar with them. Cerberus is known for, among many other things, purchasing what are called distressed securities. And I'm doing air quotes, friends. You can't see them, but distressed securities. So in other words, companies that are having real problems with their stocks and real problems making money. So they Avon divested their North American business to Cerberus Capital. And eventually Cerberus, as you do when you are this type of company, sold it at a profit, presumably.
Yeah.
To a company called Natura and Company, or Natura, I don't know how you're supposed to say it. They also own The Body Shop, which also has an MLM wing, just incidentally, in case
you
didn't know that.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Not freaking kidding you. Yeah, it's called The Body Shop at Home. Yeah. I don't think it exists in North America, I will say. I don't think that, I think the MLM part of The Body Shop is in the UK, maybe?
Yeah, their UK is ate up with MLMs every bit as much as we are.
So yeah, The Body Shop is, I give them a little side eye, even though they're just a mall store here. But anyway, when Natura again took it over, that was January 2020, and that is when they took the company private. And so things that were already a little opaque became completely opaque. Like there's no more transparency. Avon has not published an income disclosure statement in ever, like, that I could find. So and even most companies do, like, again, even some of the hardcore, really damaging MLM companies publish the income disclosure statements. You might have to dig for them, but they're out there. That traveling Jezebel person I was complimenting, this is, I think, where I got the most value out of that, is so that I didn't have to break down all these numbers. She broke them down for me.
Yay.
So, in one of the last places she was able to find the information, which was a quarterly SEC filing in, I can't tell, 2011-ish? Anyways, whatever. It was a filing in the 2010s-ish. They reported, they being Avon, of course, reported net sales of $2.8 billion. And that was generated by 6.5 million salespeople. So what this means, though, she points out, is that this is not sales made by Avon reps to the public. This is what Avon has sold to their reps.
Oh my God.
Which means, yes, that this is just simply the reps purchasing from Avon. And some of those purchases are probably going, you know, to their customers, but some of it is stuff they have to buy because if they don't make certain sales points, they aren't mm-hmm. going to get certain bonuses. And again, this is all since 2005 when they officially became an MLM. So now if you want to get certain like compensation, you have to make certain sales. And to make certain sales, you may be purchasing other things or you're trying to recruit. So based on your rank in the company, you could make between a 20 or a 40% commission. And of course, most people are not in the upper ranks.
And like, oh, almost nobody, right? And it's interesting to look at those breakdown charts of the earnings and whatnot and where the levels are. And you will always see, you know, the most people at the bottom level making the least amount of money. But if you go up, there's fewer people in that top level and the digits keep adding on and on and on because mm-hmm. This is not a regular business. If a regular business, you say, I want to open a store selling kitchen or no, let's use books mm-hmm. because we understand books.
Like those.
but I want to open a bookstore. So I am going to contact Penguin Random House because they're a big publisher and distributor. They have a distribution catalog. I go through their catalog and I see like, oh, the other Mrs. Miller. I want to put that in my bookstore. Listen to me.
What a wonderful book that is.
Yeah, right. but I can buy it from Penguin Random House hardcover. I can buy that for about $3.50 to $4. You know, say that's what they're charging me, the store owner. And then I bring that into my store and I put a $20 price tag on it because it's a hardcover book. Hardcover books are usually about $25, you know, on the cover price. You'll see that little printing there on the spine of the book that shows usually the price of the book on the consumer side. So then, of course, I sell that book to you for $20 and I pocket the $16 profit. There you go. That is how these things typically mm-hmm. work. And in MLM, you, the seller, have to buy the product from the purveyor of it, you know, like you would a bookstore. Mm-hmm. But that's where they make their money because you can't, when you go to then distribute that to it, you find that there aren't that many people willing to buy. Like you have all this product, but you don't have the bodies to sell it to. They're just, you don't mm-hmm. have a storefront. You don't, some people have like Facebook groups. This was big with LuLaRoe, the clothing mm-hmm. company. And oh my God, you got to watch that documentary on Hulu, or I think it's Hulu or Netflix. They did LuLaRich. I think it's Amazon.
It was pretty good. I don't remember where I watched it, but yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah. I definitely, and those people, by the way, have to buy in for $5,000 buy-in to get inventory, but you have to keep buying inventory. So you're mm-hmm. already in $5,000 in hock just starting. But most of the people signing on to LuLaRoe were spending about 25 to 30 grand. They would get business loans.
Yep. And then LuLaRoe is one of the worst actually for this sort of thing. Yeah.
Worst. And they are paying the price for that, thank goodness. Maybe not fast enough, but they're currently in court and I think they will be for the foreseeable future. And so when you know you don't have the bodies to sell that inventory to because you don't have, say, a mall store or, you know, mm-hmm. a way to get walking traffic or anything like that, there's just not enough parties you could ever have. So you're not going to make that money back. But the person above you that recruited you in, that got you this, they're making a cut of what you just bought from Avon.
Exactly. They made their money when you bought in. And there's market saturation. Like how many people are selling Avon? Millions and millions and billions of people, right?
Yes.
So it's not like I remember, I don't know, again, many years ago, earlier in the web years, post text only internet years, so somewhere in that range. I know I actually, there was a particular product I did want from Mary Kay at the time, because I have cool undertone skin, and at the time you had a hard time finding foundation that wasn't yellow undertone.
Yes, pale girls unite.
I know, I'm a pink pale person.
Yes.
And Mary Kay did have this one very more like cool tinted, rose tinted almost foundation. And I was like, oh, I really do like that. And even though I kind of hated myself, I was like, this is actually the color that I want to use. So anyways, I moved to a new area and I like asked around, oh, does anybody know where I can, you know, buy a Mary Kay? And oh my God, I was mauled to death in this. I was working a temp job in this office and I had like four women come up to me and were like, here, buy from me, or better yet, sew under me. And I was like, whoa, dude, I just want one container of foundation.
Damn. Okay? And see, that it's a perfect demonstration of the problem and why it is many countries, in fact, have banned MLMs. We should be one of them. But countries like even China has laws against this.
Well, they recently actually loosened the laws, but they did.
You're absolutely right. You're right. And that's very unfortunate. And a lot of Islamic countries also forbid because they say it violates a stipulation that you aren't deceptive.
That's right.
So, you know, when you have whole ass countries going, no, this is sketchy bullshit. But unfortunately, these companies that are fading over here, they're finding a whole bunch of new life in European and Asian countries that haven't banned them or don't have those laws in place yet. So,
well, like I watched the Herbalife documentary. I don't even remember what it was called anymore, but it was heart-wrenching. It was heart-wrenching. And they're making their money in South and Central America mostly now. Yes. Again, just, and they still have some business in North America, like North America, like US, Canada, or, oh, I forgot to finish what I was saying. Sorry.
Oh, you're totally fine.
I forgot to finish what I was saying. I just have like one more little thing about Avon. Yes, almost said Amazon again. So again, Danny at Traveling Jezebel broke it down, and her ultimate conclusion was the average sales rep is selling $144 worth of Avon products every month. And the average sales rep is also in the 20% commission range. So the majority of Avon reps are making $28.80 a month. And that is before expenses. And you know what's funny is my mom's Avon lady, she's a crafty lady, that one. And I like her. Her name's Sandy. She's a saucy, saucy woman. And I want to be her when I'm older. Like, it's cool. I like Sandy. But Sandy is a waitress, a server at a Village Inn, which is a restaurant that attracts many senior citizens.
Yes.
And so when I go with my parents, when I'm visiting and we go for the cheapy breakfast one day and free pie day or whatever the hell, like Sandy will be there most of the time. And my mom sits in her section because they're buzz. I'm like my mom. Like, I make friends with everybody everywhere I go. Like, that's how my mom is too. So, so anyways, Sandy sells Avon to her restaurant customers too, because they're mostly older and they still buy through catalogs. So Sandy, and I'm sure there's probably some rule against it, and hopefully she doesn't get fired because her bosses don't listen to this podcast.
That's good.
I mean, Sandy, hustle girl, like, it's fine. Like, you know what? You're waiting tables. She should be retiring. This poor woman, I'm sure she doesn't have a ton of money because she is working through her retirement year. So I would like to just point out to people that these are still the kinds of folks who are often drawn to these businesses, right?
Absolutely. Anyway,
so Sandy's kind of like crafty. She's got a really regular, consistent customer base because of most of her restaurant customers being senior.
It's amazing. So she found a nice little nest, you know, and that's the people that do okay with it. That's kind of what you need to have. A massive social cohort of some kind, right? Where they don't have a lot of access to other sellers, but you know, and it's that nice little pocket that you can settle into. And I think that the people that tend to actually make money, the 0.1% who might turn a profit doing this. What I found, I have like this funny little tidbit I found in my research from all the stuff I was poring over on the FTC website, written by this man named John M. Taylor. He's a PhD MBA with the Consumer Awareness Institute, and he has written so much.
I read some of his stuff. Yeah, really good stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
Such good stuff. And the one thing that he said is, how does MLM participation compare with gambling? This is fascinating. And I'm going to quote here. Comparisons of odds of profiting from gambling with participation in MLM have shown conclusively that participants in many games of chance fare far better. For example, in an earlier analysis, I found the odds of winning from a single spin of the wheel in a game of roulette in Las Vegas, the odds are 286 times as great as the odds of profiting after enrolling as an Amway distributor. you have 40 times higher odds of winning at roulette than you do if you enroll with a company called New Skin. That's another another beauty MLM.
Oh, yeah.
And he listed all these other companies as well. But Amway, 286 more times to hit money on a roulette wheel than you do to make money with Amway. What the fuck?
I know. So truly, you are safer playing roulette, which is a ridiculously horrible game that deeply favors the house.
Yes.
You're still better off doing that.
Yeah.
So that
take
is,
that money is, to Vegas, my friends.
That's wild,
you
wild
are
stuff.
More likely to win big in Vegas with that money that you're going to apply to, you know, buy into LuLaRoe. We have covered a lot of good ground so far with Avon. And I am now going to pivot us over to the Tupperware. So, you know, as we were saying earlier, you know, we probably all have some Tupperware or have seen it or been to a Tupperware party, or I've actually never been to a Tupperware party. My mom was buying that stuff when I was a little too young still to sort of tag along without being an annoying brat. So. So I didn't get that. But I also remember one of the famous tools was an orange peeler. It looks like basically a long plastic stick with a little thing on it. And you yep. put it in the orange peel and just rip it down the side. I think a lot of people had those too. So
I forgot that was theirs. But yeah, I definitely know the exact thing you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy how we have all these like nostalgic touchstones with a lot of this stuff. So Tupperware was named after its inventor, Earl Tupper, a gentleman from Leominster, Massachusetts. And this was back in 1946. And he was working for a chemical company. He was a kind of inventor on the side, but he, you know, as his day job, he worked in sort of chemical engineering type work. And this was, you know, not long after World War II. So the landscape of manufacturing had changed quite a bit. We were no longer using, say, plastics or polyethylene in the making of, you know, materials for the war. We needed to shift to consumer goods and manufacturing. So he developed this special type of plastic that was basically a byproduct of oil refining, which all plastics are essentially, but it was very sturdy. It was very, very hard and very, very strong stuff. And so he decided to try to develop it into a line of storage containers with those like burpable seals on the lid so it can keep air out. And that was a patent that he developed. And I believe it was 1949. Of course, you know, his original aim was to get this stuff into department stores and grocery stores, you know, things like that. But they weren't really selling. It wasn't sexy enough, really, I think, to grab people. You know, like, why do I want to have plastic? Like, plastic was very much still a new realm of exploration back in those days, you know, and of course we should all still be looking at some plastics with some side eye, you know, just because
I was gonna say, little did we know where that was gonna lead.
for sure. So he developed a different way of attempting to sell it through direct marketing. And he didn't come up with this idea though on his own. Because you can't have the story of Tupperware and Earl Tupper and this product without mentioning a woman named Brownie Wise. And she was sort of like a wizard of marketing and through the social aspect of marketing. She's the one who started buying Tupperware direct, and she was having these lavish parties to sell it at. So she kind of came up with the party format. And the main reason that this was so successful back in the 1950s was because women who were working outside the home during the war were forced back into the home and, you know, were expected to be domestic and raise their kids and things like that. And so they missed having the money of like having a side hustle and also the social aspect. So it gave women a way not only to have their own businesses, but remain in the home at the same time. It's an interesting paradigm when you think about it, because on the one hand, it sounds really progressive. It's sort of encouraging women to break out of certain gender roles, but it's also reinforcing a lot of those gender roles at the very same time. But Brownie, she was so good at this that through this particular method of selling, she sold millions of dollars worth of Tupperware. This was back in those days money. She made the company a lot of money. And so Earl Tupper brought her on as sort of the vice president of marketing, and actually ran the party division, the Tupperware party division.
Mm.
So she sort of became the face of the company. And it's perfect because she's a woman. It's aimed at women. It becomes this big sort of progressive thing, similar to your Avon story. That founder having hired the first mm-hmm. female salespeople definitely had a very similar bent. But what they also, as part of the data, although it's not mentioned quite as much directly, is it wasn't just, you know, white suburban married women selling this stuff. It was single women. It was women in Black communities and other minority communities, divorcees, single moms. And Brownie herself was a single mother. That should be mentioned. She was previously married, ended up divorcing him and raising her son. And so this whole party thing ended up becoming like a very useful thing for her to make money. And she even had started her own business selling all kinds of products this way before she went and joined Tupperware. So eventually, though, the relationship between Earl and Brownie fell out. It was, he was a jealous bastard, to put it lightly. He didn't like how Brownie was basically putting more of the focus on the parties than on his invention. It was becoming more about the social aspect, and he didn't like that very much. He always still wanted to sell the product in stores. He decided to completely yank her back out of the company. She didn't have any stocks within the company, even though they were publicly traded at this time. He fired her. Any association she had with the company, he wiped clean. They took copies of her book that she wrote when she was employed with them. She wrote a book about her experiences mm-hmm. doing this and living in this role. And he took all the copies that they had and they buried them somewhere.
Jesus.
In the fucking ground. Yeah. And then he turns around and sells the company, Tupperware, to Rexall, the drugstore.
Rexall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we've got them in Canada.
Oh, they're still around.
Yeah. We got some Rexalls. Anyway.
Yeah. And so this was in 1977, I believe. And so Rexall sold off, like spun off their drugstore division, bought Tupperware, changed the name to Dart Industries, which then merged with a company called Kraft Co. But then that company demerged a few years later, and then Tupperware Brands was spun off in 1996 to another company called Premark, which was then acquired by the Illinois Tool Works Company 3 years later. And so in 2003, though, that's kind of when the dominoes started falling. Tupperware closed its operations that they had in the UK and Ireland because of the direct sales model. It just wasn't working over there.
I was going to say, this is about the same time this started happening at Avon. So, yep.
Exactly. And there have been some like import and distribution, like classic sales since then overseas, but they relaunched in the UK in 2011 and started recruiting UK staff, but then they decided out of nowhere to stop, to just not do that. So they are going through some turbulence at this point. They don't know what which way is up anymore. As of 2007, Tupperware was sold by means of approximately 1.9 million direct salespeople who were contracted with them. And then jump to 2018, Tupperware is withdrawing from one country after another. They got out of Israel. They got out of the Netherlands, where they had New Zealand as of 2022, pulled out of New Zealand. And then November 2nd, 2022, after they published their quarterly reports, the company said that it couldn't maintain compliance with its credit agreement. Their stock dropped 40%. And as of April of this year in 2023, the company has stated that they have substantial doubt about the company's ability to continue going. So they are quite literally, as of today, about ready to fall off completely. They still claim to sell in 82 countries, but that list is not up to date, apparently, because as we speak, they're pulling out of more and more countries. So
yeah, it's interesting. My sister-in-law actually did a lot of Tupperware parties. She never sold it, but she would host and purchase. She stopped doing that a few years ago. And I don't know why. I never asked her, because I was like, whatever, less MLM is good.
If they hadn't adopted, I think, because again, it's similar to Avon, it looks like it coincides when they go from direct sales into MLM structure. Tupperware still predominantly sold through parties with hostesses and rewards. Although some countries where they're banned from doing that, you can just buy it online. So New Zealand, for instance, you can still buy Tupperware in New Zealand. You just can't do it through a party, which is great.
Earl Tupper kind of got his dream in a way through his company's eventual failure.
He absolutely, absolutely did. And they are, like all the others, shown to be manipulative with their statistics and all that. Like, for instance, in 2018, they showed that 94% of its active distributors are on the lowest level of the pyramid, with gross earnings of $653.
Wow. Yeah,
that is their average earning. So maybe you're making a little more than you're making at Avon, but you're still not cracking that four-figure realm.
That's just gross earnings, though. Like, again, yeah. So we don't even know what the expenses are.
Yeah, once you start doing that math, when I mentioned that unique seller, I'll post the link to her blog. She was the one who was very skeptical about the whole thing, and but she was still trying to make it work. And they were showing all the ways that she was being pressured in this group chat with the upline. And we're a good ways into this, and I haven't really brought up a lot of lingo, but upline and downline, that whole thing. So the structure of an MLM, despite what the adherents will try to tell you, is very much a pyramid. When we say it's a pyramid scheme, we're not being necessarily inaccurate there. It's that a pyramid scheme, classically, the illegal pyramid scheme, involves the exact same financial structure and hierarchy, only they don't have a product. They're selling you on an idea. So the only difference between an MLM and a pyramid scheme is an MLM is only legal because they have a tangible product that they are selling to customers. If they didn't have that, then it would be a pyramid scheme. And honestly, given the quality of some of these items and the fact that they're so expensive and they fall, you know, they fall apart, like the LuLaRoe stuff, like those leggings with all the holes in them, and you know,
notoriously bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Such bad quality that it might as well be a pyramid scheme in every which way. And now we're starting to see the reemergence of pyramid schemes by getting people to buy in to a product that is still in development. And, you know, they'll show you pictures of it and stuff, but nobody actually has it. But they've already bought in thousands of dollars to get this product when it's available. And they're already trying to recruit people under them the same way. But this product is nowhere to be found. But they're just telling you, oh, it's coming. It's coming.
I don't even buy pre-release games on Steam. Like, yeah. I'm definitely not going to invest in something that doesn't exist yet.
You know, and I also, too, you know, the whole thing with Tupperware that, you know, it has sort of a wholesome backstory, and it retains a wholesome image overall, I think, because of that backstory built on women who were still trying to find their station in society. Mm-hmm. And this is why this shit pisses me off so much, is because who they're taking advantage of. You elucidated on that very beautifully earlier when we talked about, like, your upbringing, you know, not having money to grow up, people that are desperate to get out of poverty, they're prey to these people. Mm-hmm. And nothing pisses me off more than those kind of people. And not only do they do that, they bring these people in and they program them with the language and the lingo. And they say that you're your own CEO, you're your own boss. I can make my own hours. I can set my own schedule.
And I hate it so much. You're not your own CEO. You don't own the company. You're not running the company. Like,
no.
And what one thing that they being, you know, some of the responses that many MLM folks will give to people, or rebuttals, I should say, is they'll be like, well, all companies are pyramidal because you've got a CEO at the top. And da, da, da. But it's like, no. But there's not a constant recruitment underneath. If you're a customer service rep, you don't have to go out and find new customer service reps. You just do your job and you earn the money.
Yes, that is the simple, exactly. I'm so glad you brought that up, by the way, because that one sticks in my craw a lot. And I would say social media has made this even worse for people because that's the new way to recruit. That's the new way to have your parties. You don't even have to leave your house. You can have a Pampered Chef party in a Facebook group or on a Facebook event page, place your orders and do the whole thing. And then you're telling the person who's the seller at that party that I just got paid today. And it's like, no, you just received money today that you have to use to then go buy product. Do a profit and loss statement. Jesus Christ.
And you know what? I still, even though I have been very vocally against this business structure, which I use loosely the term business structure. I still constantly get invited to these parties on Facebook.
All the time.
Even by people I have actually told, please don't invite me anymore. Interestingly. I think they just go through and go click, 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 and invite.
Whole damn friends list. And I tell you what, I have a lot of friends who are both sellers in MLMs and attend the parties. I won't say a lot of friends, a significant enough number, I would say. I could think off the top of my head right now, I have like 3 or 4 friends that I know sell for one of these companies. And I know that they'll probably listen to this and they're probably not going to be happy. In fact, I've been worried about doing this series because of the possible social ramifications. And I don't want people thinking I'm calling them idiots because I'm not. What I am saying, though, is that when you really look at how these things are structured and when you look at who is actually benefiting, and it is not a shameful thing to realize and admit that you got taken advantage of. We all have. We've all fallen Absolutely. For something. And I wanted to do MLMs as part of the cult series because I said this before, I think on the cult primer episode, I had mentioned that if I was going to join a cult, this is probably the one that would have got me. I think I've been so close to saying, well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I have 2 young kids. This was back in those days. And I can't afford daycare, but maybe I can find a way to bring in some extra money because we could certainly use it. And so I was very close to considering something like that because I really thought in the way that the sellers at the party sell it, you know, and say it like, oh, they're living their best lives. They just went on a cruise. Mm-hmm. They go to these big meetings. And that's the other thing, part of the party culture is you have your big sales meetings, like your yearly thing that you have to pay to attend thousands of dollars to attend one of these conferences that program you even deeper into the culture of this company. You name
Absolutely.
It. It's disgusting. And they call it like Tupperware calls theirs Jubilees. And, you know, you go and it's like thousands of dollars and at this resort and they have all these performers. LuLaRoe did the same thing. They'd spend like $100,000 or more on these big events that people would then pay even more to attend. And they had to. They were made to feel like they had to go.
And there you go. And there's where we start getting into some of the ways it ties into cult-like behavior. And also why, again, just to reiterate what you were saying earlier, we're not like crapping on people who are trying to sell this and trying to make a living. It's not you that I know we have an issue with. It's the fact that these structures exist and how predatory and parasitic, frankly, that they are.
Very much.
And how they harm people who are maybe optimistic and hopeful, who think, oh, this could be something that helps me because I feel trapped in these other ways or I feel unable to do these other things. Like, anyways, so yeah, these big gatherings that cost tons of money, like if you don't go, oh, you're not committed, you're not one of us. And many people are very susceptible. Well, I shouldn't even say susceptible. Most people want community and they want to belong. And that's, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very wonderful human impulse in many ways. And business structures like this abuse that. And those events are absolutely indoctrination sessions.
And while they're pocketing from that, you come home with a head full of programming and then you continue to invest even more money. Every dime that you get that could be profit goes right back into the business. You are not getting richer. You're working harder. The guy that I mentioned earlier, the MBA FTC guy, he joined an MLM just to test it out. He wanted to experience it, you know? So he joined New Skin and he wanted to follow the path and just see where it led. He said he became one of the top 1% of sellers in New Skin. However, he was losing $1,200 a month. Still, you're in the top 1% of sellers on paper and you're losing $1,200 a month. My fucking God, that's my mortgage. You know what I mean? Like, could you just imagine like losing that much money? So, you know, but that was all part of the experiment for him. So he, you know, but he was like, if I'd known, I didn't know. I entered this based on what they told me I would make. And they gave me the facts and the figures. And he goes in just ready to see what happens. He kicks its ass. He does the best he can. And he still fails. And it's like diet culture. And it's like so many other things that tell you that if you try hard and you follow these rules, you will succeed. But if you fail, let's say on a diet and you start gaining weight again, well, it's because you didn't try hard enough and you fucked it up and it's all on you. And that's exactly what they do to people to keep them in it.
And it's a way to keep an unsustainable thing going when you blame the people who you harm. And they internalize it. And not everyone internalizes it, but many people do. And here's another way I think women are particularly, not, and again, not exclusively, but particularly prone to it, is because I think the way that we are socialized is that we're going to take the blame. We're going to want to smooth things over. We're going to want to heal social bonds. Like women are frequently or raised in this way. And I think it can really create this kind of behavior where you're willing to just blame yourself. You're more, almost more willing to blame yourself, I think.
I mean, yeah, if you look at it straight from like sex and rape culture and everything forward and why things go unreported. And any time that women have been taken advantage of either in the personal or business realm, we've all been programmed a little bit and we're all probably programmed to be people pleasers and peacemakers and conflict resolvers, you know, things like that. And so it really does prey on. And similarly, the ones that are kind of aimed more at men, like Amway, for instance, I would say has a very strong male thread running through it. And they get them on the sort of alpha bro business, you know, baller, making money because you're providing for your family. And, you know, so they take advantage of those same social structures and vulnerabilities that men tend to have. I wanted to do this so badly because it conforms to most of the rules and hallmarks of cult behavior. Like I said, these two companies, we're giving you the best of the best. And this is still.
Yeah, because that's just it. Like Avon is even today, even with the current structure, again, not excusing them. I don't think you should sell Avon. I think we should just let it die. It's a company that has passed its time. However, it still is not as destructive as other ones like New Skin or Herbalife or Monad or any of these kind of newer ones that came about at a time when things were already more predatory.
I do want to say, as we start to bring this first episode to a close, and believe me, there's so much more to come, is that when you are invited to one of these parties and you feel compelled to buy something, that pressure to buy something, and you just want to be nice to be there for your friend, realize that that is all part of the manipulation that you are enabling when you hand over your dollars. And it might be like you want to help your friend because your friend wants the free gifts and wants a little bit extra money for herself. But it's almost like giving money to someone you know is going to turn around and use it to buy something that will harm them. You know what I mean? It's like,
sure,
you don't want to enable that, even if it might upset your friend or might bewilder your friend. And that's the other thing. These companies ruin relationships in a big way. When you start seeing your friends and family as potential sources of income and no longer as just your friend or your family, that relationship starts to wither and die on the vine pretty quickly.
And it comes from, again, that desperation because it is so hard to make money. So when you're struggling to sell anything and you're suddenly going, oh shit, this actually is not the easy thing that they were claiming it was. And I'm sure in the small print, it always says stuff like that. But that, let's be real, that's not what they're selling. And that's not what they're shoving down your throat or indoctrinating or whatever. So yeah, you do start pressuring friends and family. Like, I actually, again, as I said earlier, as I've gotten older, I kind of care less about the people pleasing. Not that I'm fully immune, but I have not gone to any parties in a long time now because I have told people, I'm sorry, this is just not something that I support. I have ethical problems with the business model. I wish you every success. And I don't get into it. I don't try to talk them out of it. I just will not even go. Sometimes I don't, if it's on Facebook, I just simply click not interested or not attending or whatever. And I don't even say anything. But a few years ago, I actually had a person, I wouldn't say it was like a close friend, but a pretty good friend who actually got super mad at me because I would not come to her Epicure party.
Oh, interesting.
and I had actually ordered something one other time before that because there was a lot of pressure. Like she was always going blah 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 blah. And so finally I was like, fine, I'll order this one thing of seasoning. Jesus, leave me alone. And then I regretted it and I felt mad at myself because I gave in, even though I know and I don't want to, etc. But yeah, it really is, she's somebody I don't speak to anymore because no conversation could happen without it being about me buying something.
Yeah, it's not cool, especially like maybe you go to one, but it keeps happening. And that's the thing is that rule of the sort of diminishing returns is, yeah, maybe you had a really good successful party. And sure, because all your friends want to be there for you. But if you keep inviting them over and over again to the same shit with the expectation that they buy stuff, then yeah, you are manipulating other people. And yeah, you're going to end up very alone. And that's what I really think, all while you're in, you know, enriching people and you're, again, the upline being the people over you and then your downline are the people below you. So if you ever have a downline, that means you've probably climbed a couple levels up the pyramid. So your downline, those are the people under you and all their commissions from all their sales, quote unquote, air quoting sales, because the sale is the shit they buy from Avon or Mary Kay or whatever. But a percentage of that goes up the line to your upline. So, and then you get to the very tippity top, your blue diamond members, your ultra executive level, you know, and all this shit. Those people aren't doing anything but collecting money. They're not selling anything.
If you get in on one of these MLMs from day one, that's about the only way you're ever going to make money. And you're making it on the backs of other people who are losing money. And so I don't think I could feel good about that. Like, frankly, you know what's interesting? An interesting side note, and you can keep this in or not, that is your choice. But just talking about events and how indoctrinating those events are. When I went to work at PricewaterhouseCoopers in 2004, I want to say, I was sent to Chicago for this onboarding.
Oh.
And during the onboarding, I'm sitting there in this crowd, and there's a guy up front with one of those headsets on who's walking around and all energetic, and he's saying stuff, and he's making us chant and reply, and I'm sitting here going, what the fuck? This is an indoctrination. This is not an onboarding. This is an indoctrination. So I'm even sitting there in the crowd going, this is a legitimate company. This is a prestigious firm. And they're still doing this crap. And and there was like all this pressure to work. And they're saying, oh, you got to work really hard. And like they have this team building exercise thing that was putting a bicycle together from some kit. And at 5 or 6 or whenever, like it's still going. And I'm like, I got to get out of here. I'm not here for this. I'm not here to work 24/7. That is not the kind of person I am, which is why my career with PwC only lasted a few years, because it turns out that culture of constantly working, being on the weekends and on in the evenings. And they would say that they aren't expecting it of you, but they fucking are.
Oh, okay? Of course.
I now understood why it's called one of the greatest places to start your career, because you're probably going to leave as soon as you can. but anyway, I just wanted to point out that these types of techniques, what I am calling indoctrination. Oh, sorry. And the bike thing, there was so much pressure for me not to leave.
Oh,
I told people like, I got to go. I'm diabetic. My sugar's running low. I feel like crap. Like, I'm not even doing this. It's all the men were jumping in and doing all this stuff. And we're just freaking standing around. So I'm wasting my time. Right. So I left, and people were kind of shitty to me about it. But again, I'm not very prone to groupthink and these types of situations. I'm just like, So anyways, so my point is, I just wanted to share this, just how ubiquitous these techniques are, and how even completely reputable companies still use them. And it's because our brains are very prone to connecting with these types of things. I was the odd man out. Mm-hmm. Everyone else was really into it. And that's why these things work. And that's why I'm not judging the people who are trying to hustle and sell. Because, you know, people, there are many smart people who know how our brains tend to work and how our psychology tends to work. And they make heavy use of those things. Yeah. And even if you know it can, you can still get sucked in. It's like Twitter, why I've been on Twitter less, because even though I know the algorithm wants me to be angry, I still can't avoid it. I still end up getting drawn into crap that makes me angry, even though I know. So you know what? This is why my judgment is with the companies and the people who start and run these companies.
Because there are people, the odd ones out, the people like you and me, if we were a little more, say psychopathic, for lack of a better word, we would be the people at the top of that pyramid, mm-hmm. raking in the money. If we were able to sleep at night with that knowledge of ourselves comfortably, I would absolutely be incredibly rich. And I mean, that's how it happens. If you look at, for instance, the head of LuLaRoe, the husband and wife that mm-hmm. founded that company, the interviews that they gave, even now, they are so indoctrinated with their own bullshit. They completely yep. believe that they are innocent, just normal business people. But that is over many years of them convincing themselves. And after you lie to yourself enough, you start to believe it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. This is, again, I'm glad we were able to kind of reiterate and reinforce that, because as I've said, anytime we're talking about cults, it's not the members of the cult that I am mm-hmm. judging. It is the leaders. It is the system. It is the structure. And also too, with these MLMs, a lot of them thread in a lot of religious doctrine and other doctrine nations as well.
We're kind of coming in assuming people already know something about MLMs here. Like, this is sort of like a 201, I guess, not mm-hmm. a 101. Right. But like, this is why so many Mormons, for example,
oh, yeah.
are very drawn to this sort of thing, because
Utah is the capital.
yep. There yeah. is this very Christian element. And also, again, just in-grouping and out-grouping. Like, if you, again, with the LuLaRoe doc, which was fairly recent and so good, you can actually see these examples of the in-grouping and out-grouping. Like, when you, if you start expressing doubts, people will be hateful towards you. And mm-hmm. you might, because you've alienated all your other friends you had before you joined the group, mm-hmm. now, if you lose these friends, you've lost your entire social circle. And that's a huge amount of pressure very to stay
much.
In it.
Very, very much. I mean, you find community and family among your fellow members, and that is completely one of the, you know, underpinnings of the entire operation. So, and again, that's why it's so important, I think, to, if you can, just if you're experiencing any of these things, or you've been a member of one of these things, if you can find an ability to kind of start to distance away from it, you'll end up probably salvaging a lot of relationships and, you know, not going bankrupt. And mm-hmm. and that is ultimately why I wanted to talk about this, and why I'm so glad Beverly is into talking about it as well. Woo! Because, you know, I thought I was going to have to do these alone, because I couldn't find other people, you know, that were like, I don't know if I know enough or care enough about it. I'm like, man, we need people who care.
I am passionate about it. I'm passionate about medical quackery. I'm passionate about anything that pulls the wool over people's eyes, that uses our psychological and brain structures against us. Like, mm-hmm. I have such a strong sense of ethics around that kind of thing. And so, yeah, totally passionate about this.
yeah. Well, next week we will talk about, well, I don't know, but we'll keep it a surprise, but we're going to delve into mm-hmm. some darker ones. As we said, I wanted this episode to be a little lighter, a little more, you know, introductory. And you're right. It is a little more advanced. My hope is that we have answered some questions about what an MLM generally is, but we're going to keep threading that information in as we do mm-hmm. the other episodes as well. So we are by no means is this a complete episode. You're going to have to listen to the next parts, and man, they're going to get a little wild.
Oh, there is so much more and so much worse.
oh yeah. Yeah. So strap in, ding dongs. Or strap on. I don't know. No, okay.
Nope. Strap in. Let's keep it in.
Oh my God. Well, thank you.
And that's the end of the episode. That right is there.
Pretty much a good place to
strap on.
Yeah, we got to the strap-ons. Now we're going to cut out. But
you can just fade it out on my cackling, you know?
But yes, please come back next week for the next episode. And also hit me up on the Patreon page or at ddarknesstime@gmail.com or the Facebook page or the Twitter. I'm on all the things, on all the places. So we will be back next week. Have a good one, folks. And don't buy any MLM stuff. Just don't do it.
This episode was produced by yours truly, Allison Dixon, and wouldn't be possible without the amazing contributions of countless friends, family, and Patreon supporters. Big shouts also go out to Nathaniel Dixon for all the show art, as well as Spencer Morlock and Ken Dixon for the music. I'll be back with something new next week. In the meantime, you know what to do. Be good, you little ding-dongs.